From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to learn about Freedom University strategy, college professors helping undocumented students with college prep and leadership development. So be sure to join us for that. Opioid addiction does not discriminate. It affects families and communities at every socioeconomic level and in every region in the state. We are learning today about one at-risk occupation, construction workers. Recent studies found that workers in related fields are six times more likely to die of opioid overdoses than the general population. Tim Stevens is a peer recovery coach with Georgia Council on Substance Abuse. He's been in long-term recovery since 2012 and used to work construction. Tim, welcome to On Second Thought.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Also here from the council, Larissa Barthen. She's Outreach and Communications Manager. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Tim, the CDC released this study showing that people in certain occupations do have higher likelihoods of addiction, including people involved with highway projects, agriculture, or roofing. So based on your firsthand experience, what do you think these jobs see higher rates of addiction?
Yeah, so in the construction field, we're out there in the weather, and also with the injuries and stuff like that. So we're experiencing like a lot of pain, especially as we get older, on our feet, 8 to 10 hours, sometimes 12 hours a day, in extreme colds and extreme heat, heavy lifting. And so you start seeing a lot of back pain, a lot of pain with the feet. And then if there's an injury, you know, we're more prone for falling and stuff like that.
So a lot of risk out there. But beyond that firsthand experience, Larissa, what does research show about the link between opioids and these professions?
So research shows that you're six times more likely to die of an overdose if you work in the field. And so again, like Tim said, all of the physical pressures of it, and then also the lack of paid time off or the lack of availability of medical services, the can't take a sick day if you're not feeling well, with all of those things combined makes for much higher overdose rates.
And Tim, for you, you had personal experience with substance abuse. If you don't mind asking, how did you become addicted?
Okay, so I started experimenting with marijuana, alcohol in my teens. And then as I got older, and I would, at working age, going for labor jobs in the construction field. And basically, it was a culture. You know, the people that I hung around and worked with, lunch breaks was drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana and actually smoking marijuana all throughout the day when the bosses weren't around.
Mm.
Yeah.
And this is probably before, at an age that when there was not a lot of drug testing going on?
Yeah. So what you'll find is that usually in the construction, it's a good old boy system, which means people that know you, you're able to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, sometimes there was a lot of, you know, the smaller crews of five or six guys, there wouldn't be any drug testing.
What kind of work did you do generally?
So I've always been in construction with as a laborer, and I did residential painting, and then and just any kind of odd job that I can get, a lot of shoveling and stuff. And there at the end, I was doing swimming pool renovations.
So what led you to recovery?
Okay, so what happened is that the things that were fun, like a double-wielded sword turned on me, and I became unemployable. I wasn't coming to work on time, always calling out, quitting my jobs on the fly because I didn't feel like I was appreciated or treated right. And so it got so bad to where, you know, it was time for Tim to grow up. I was 35 years old, and I wasn't paying my bills, and my parents were, and they had enough. And so I had to make a decision, and I went and saw that people in recovery were a lot happier, and I just wanted the misery to stop. So I decided to just take some suggestions that they gave me, and it turned my life around.
Larissa, is this the kind of thing that you hear from a lot of people, that they, you know, become unable to function or unable to pay their bills or take care of things? Or does it get worse in the heroin addicted or the opioid addicted age?
Absolutely. I mean, so a lot of times you hear that term rock bottom being thrown around. A lot of times people that are using opiates, that rock bottom is death. So we think about it, you know, the elevator gets off at every floor. How do we help support people getting out of it before they reach that point of death? So, you know, maybe somebody might lose their job or lose relationships with their family or basically lose the trust of everybody else around them and feeling like alone in this world. And how do we help support people when they're in that position and help bring them back up to, you know, being active members of society?
We're talking about some construction-based industry or labor-based industries, people being at higher risks. What are some of the other contributing factors of abuse in addition to a person's occupation?
So there are a number of different contributing factors. One that's researched a lot is adverse childhood experiences, so the level of trauma that somebody experienced as a child, and that plays a large role into somebody's rates of substance use developing when they get older, their socioeconomic status. We know that opioids affects everybody across the board, but having access to medical care, having access to decent jobs, high-paying jobs, those all play a huge factor in it.
But at Georgia Council on Substance Abuse, Tim, you're a peer recovery coach. Have you worked with any other construction workers who have struggled with opioid addiction?
Yeah, actually where I work I do peer recovery for people that come into the emergency room for alcohol or drug-related crises. And a lot of those people that are coming in are construction field workers. And it starts off with pain, and they take, they're prescribed painkillers. And then even if they don't have a substance use disorder, what we're finding is that the body becomes physically addicted as well. And then there's a lot of pain when they're trying to taper off the opioids.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that we've heard before, Larissa. Most people who end up using heroin in the U.S. did start out on prescription opioids. So do you think that overprescribing by doctors in Georgia has contributed to the crisis here?
Absolutely. There are the Attorney General's office just filed a few lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies, but that's the primary way that most people start using. So personally, I ended up was a heroin user, but that didn't start with, you know, one day jumping into heroin. It starts with the process of, you know, smoking, drinking, taking pills, taking Percocets, and then Oxycontin. And it, you know, those medications, they're prescribed from a doctor, and that's where most people start.
That this is the FDA approval came for Oxycontin in 1995, and almost overnight the drug became a phenomenal medical marketplace success. But pharmaceutical companies aren't the only who've made a lot of people, organizations that have made a lot of money, billions of dollars on such drugs, resulting in these lawsuits. How about other organizations? Are there, you know, the construction industry depends upon cheap labor. How does this affect that whole cycle?
So one of the things with that, too, is they fight for these contracts. They fight. It's a very competitive market fighting for a construction contract. Say they get a contract to build a bridge and they have, you know, a certain amount of time to do that, and they have to get it done within a very small margin of profit. And so they can't afford to, or the workers can't afford to take a day off of work. So when they're in pain, they're forced to continue working anyway so that they can meet these guidelines.
That is Larissa Barthent. She's with the Georgia Council on Substance Abuse. Also with me is Tim Stevens. He's a peer recovery coach for the organization. We're talking about how the opioid crisis impacts blue-collar workers in particular. A recent study said that construction workers in those related fields more than six times likely more likely to die of an opioid overdose than many other professions. So how about somebody who is actually in the profession? You know, construction workers face barriers to pain management without drugs on the job and the nature of the work. So let's say someone is on a job site, could possibly be difficult for them to go back and forth between the site and the place they need to go for treatment. Is there anything that could be done to resolve these kinds of issues? Tim, any thoughts?
Yeah, so what I'm thinking is that when I was in the construction field, there was the stigma of drug addiction, and nobody really wanted to talk about it, even though it was all around us. And I really feel that from the research that I was doing, that substance use disorder in the workplace causes a negative impact on the bottom line for construction worker owners. And so I feel that if they supported a lifestyle of recovery, that they would actually see that they would be saving money. And some of those things were saying that they would save as much as $3,000 a month.
Really? So any other data you have on that, Larissa? You were nodding. No. Okay. So but let's look at that a little bit more. We're talking about the culture, Tim. You know, that people were using, they're drinking at lunch, using during the day. Is there any kind of path inside of that, you know, for you? Did you see anybody who was in recovery that you thought, I could follow this?
You know, to be honest with you, I did not see anybody in recovery in the construction field. And actually that after some time of being in recovery and working with a new crew, they asked me one time, you know, about what was my drug of choice or, you know, do I drink? And I said, no, I don't drink. And then they started chuckling, saying, what are you in recovery? And I'm ashamed to say, because at the time, I denied it. I said, no, I'm not in recovery, because it was a joke, you know, it was a joke. And so I really feel that if the workers were educated, that actually that there's nothing wrong, and just break that stigma of recovery and just have a culture of supporting. I really feel that overall, everybody would see the benefits throughout the community, throughout the company, better customer service. And not only that, but I'm sure that the community will want to support a business that supports wellness and health.
Yeah, and one of the things that our executive director always says is we're changing social norms around addiction. So there's this stigma associated with substance use disorders that, you know, if you stop using or if you can't like hold your own while using, that makes you a weak person. Mm-hmm. And so when we change that into like lifting up recovery and lifting up getting better, and we do that like broadly as a society, and it starts to trickle into different areas. So like construction workers, our factory workers, are all different areas. Then that's when we really start to see a change. So it's changing the culture and the way that we view substance use disorders.
So how about somebody who might be listening to this or considering surgery or dealing with some sort of injury or pain? That person may be weighing the fight with pain against a fight with possible addiction. Is that a choice that people can make? What's your advice?
My advice would be to do as much research as you can. So there's all kinds of information out there. Just start searching and see, do your own research, and then also talk with your doctor and find out what the risks and the benefits are. So some people are going to need to be prescribed prescription painkillers. We're not saying completely wipe them off the market, but know what's going to be best for you. And then also make yourself aware of what the risks are. So if it does start to get out of hand, how do I find help and how do I get the support that I need to pull it back?
You've talked about the small margins in the construction industry, and Tim mentioned how much addiction actually ends up costing them. What do you think the role of construction companies and those that hire them, like cities or developers, might be in doing something about this part of the crisis?
So I think we all have a role in this. Particularly for the owners of the companies, like Tim said, that their bottom line goes up if they allow people to get support. So a lot of companies say that when they hire somebody in recovery, those are some of the best workers that they've ever had, because they show up to work on time, they work hard, and they're there every day. And so when we help support people through this difficult time, it actually ends up better on the other side.
What is your organization's approach to the problem?
So we look at it more of a more of a holistic view. So we don't focus particularly on one single substance. We focus on all substances as a whole, and then on the opposite side, recovery as a whole. So how do we help support somebody and develop and build a connection with them that makes them feel as though what they have to say is valid and what they're doing is valid and supported? So we don't, like the work that Tim does in the emergency department, we don't only see people that experience opioid overdoses. We see people that experience a meth-related incident or alcohol-related incident or cocaine, anything across the board. And we look at all of that the same and see that as an issue of human connection as opposed to particular substances.
Yes, something we were hearing earlier about how the brain seeks that dopamine rush of connection when they're looking for a high. So, Tim, for you, somebody who's been in this profession, seeing somebody in the emergency room, how do you speak to? What's that initial contact like helping somebody puncture through probably what is denial and addiction?
So my initial contact is always as a listener. A lot of times people that come in, they just want to be heard. They're kind of rushed almost like a number with the nurses and the doctors whose primary job is to stabilize. And so I come in there as the social and the connecting that we've been talking about. And I let them tell me what's working for them. So I never tell them what to do or what needs to happen. And usually what we find when I listen, that the answer is already inside of them. It's just taking the time out to just let them express themselves where they're most comfortable.
Laura, we got to wrap, but I'm wondering how the state is doing. Is it making strides to actually reduce the rate of opioid addiction?
So there is a lot going on in the state of Georgia. The Attorney General put together a statewide opioid task force, which brings together all the different agencies, Department of Public Health, Department of Behavioral Health, Criminal Justice, to work together and come up with a plan on how we're going to reduce these numbers. There's also $4 million in funding that came down directly to communities. So we see these community centers popping up all throughout the state, providing peer support like Tim offers, providing peer support at a local level where somebody doesn't have to have insurance, they don't have to pay for it. So we're doing a lot in Georgia.
Tim Stevens and Larissa Barthen, both from the Georgia Council on Substance Abuse, thanks so much for speaking with us. That's all we've got for today. I'm Virginia Prescott. We'll be back tomorrow with more on Second Thought.